18 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California, and it's tape number 529, January the 25th, 1982. That month went away pretty fast, and there's a lot of news to cover. I'm going to do probably the second half of this program, or three quarters of it, on the Air Florida flight that went down in the Potomac in Washington, D.C. on January the 14th. But before I do that, I want to run down some stories that are in the news that I may get back to later that are important, and to update a few of the back programs before I lose track of this information. I very seldom make a local announcement on this program, but we do have a John Maury, he's president of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers of the CIA. He'll be speaking here on the peninsula Wednesday at 12:15 at the Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies. If you want to go over and see him or meet a real live head of the intelligence community, one of the highest officials who's here speaking, this is happening here on the Monterey Peninsula this next Wednesday. Also on the 30th, George Bush is going to be here for the large Republican convention. I'm trying to get out some handbills or printed sheets if I can on his relationship as director of the CIA to the Orlando Letelier murder, Ronnie Moffitt in Washington, D.C., his links to Theodore Shackley, George Corcoran, Edward Wilson, Frank Turple, the main assassination teams of the CIA, George Bush's role with those people linked to Nazis, Gestapo, Nazis living in Chile, Argentina, Florida, and around the world. George Bush is a very important person as the director of the CIA with contacts when they were really pushing and training the terrorist teams overseas in Uganda, Libya, and South America. So he will be here, and hopefully maybe we can hand out some pamphlets. Last week, I went pretty quickly on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's birthday. I ran out of time. Maybe in a few weeks, if the news slows down, I'll do an update on the new evidence that has come out since the House Select Committee and stories about Martin Luther King as a victim of the American assassination syndrome. Briefly, on 60 Minutes tonight, they read a letter asking for an investigation into the Malcolm X murder and that the two men that are in prison serving time might not have done it at all. And somebody wrote a letter asking, why hasn't this been opened up? The House Select Committee on Assassinations should have gone into John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King at the same time because the same people were behind them and they just chose two assassinations and at the end concluded both of those were conspiracies. There is this new book out by David Garrow, the FBI and Martin Luther King, From Solo to Memphis. It's the expose of the murder of Martin Luther King and the letters he would get from the FBI, from the highest levels of the FBI, telling him his end was approaching, that he should commit suicide, look into his heart and know that he's a fraud and a liability to Negroes, and take his filthy, fraudulent self and do something to it to help the nation. Those were letters from the FBI that were being sent to him before he was murdered. And they are in that book, The FBI and Martin Luther King, by David Garrow, that just was published recently, Norton Press. A question came up in a trial in San Francisco and Oakland last week where a person who had pleaded guilty to a crime on 60 Minutes was being tried, and they tried to get a change of venue because of publicity on the program. The judge threw that out. He said the jurors are not informed. No more than 15% take a daily newspaper, 5% take a news periodical, and 30% watch TV, and those that do only watch the sports. He said, I don't mean to be hard, but they're not informed. And he said when they took a prospective group of jurors, there were 50 of them for a recent death penalty phase, they were questioned, and not one of them knew who Adolf Hitler was. This was in a court in Oakland recently. This week, this coming week, will be the anniversary of the 100th year since Franklin Roosevelt was born. The administration of Ronald Reagan is tearing apart all the goals or ideals that he had and put together after what we refer to as the Great Depression. A young student from Harvard is going to have speeches in Congress, and then they're going to have tape recordings of the voice of Franklin Roosevelt. The fellow, his name is Peter Covier. He studied Roosevelt's speeches and history at Harvard University, and he's heir to the Jim Beam fortune, the distillery, and he is putting this program on to remind people of the contrast, I suppose, between Herbert Hoover's administration, but the speeches of Roosevelt that gave so much hope to people at a time when they were really rock bottom. And simultaneously with the celebration of the birthday of Franklin Roosevelt, his mansion was almost burned down. Most of the papers, or some of them, were protected, but the third floor was extensively damaged. And last night there was a fire at the FDR mansion. Conspiracy or coincidence? I would believe that simultaneously with the celebration of Roosevelt's birthday, somebody had a hand in setting fire. For researchers who take this tape or listen to the broadcast that we do on this program, look in your books and biographies, information on Honeywell Corporation and Dektor. Dektor is a company that makes government contracts for lie detector tests, electronic equipment. A friend, is putting a story together. I can't give you the details, but we're looking for the German Nazi connections to the Honeywell Dektor Corporation. So get busy with your bibliographies, articles, and so forth. And when I put a call out for this, you'd be surprised how many researchers can get there and copy articles. And it rings a bell, and they supply the information. So I'll put you to it. That's your homework for this week. Anything on Dektor Corporation or Honeywell. Last week, I briefly mentioned, and I will get into it in detail later, the trial of Claus von Bülow that's taking place right now in Newport, Rhode Island. But I must say that even though he's been charged with injecting his wife, she's in a coma, will not recover from it. He's been charged with this. I can tell you right now that he'll be acquitted of that. There's no use even having a trial. This week I read about the jury that was picked for Claus von Bülow. There were 7 men and 5 women, but on this jury of 12 people, 4 are employers or employees of just one place. I've never heard of a trial like this, and the names, of course, in this case are dynamite and very important names. 4 came from one place. The one place is the United States government, Navy, intelligence. The 4 jurors are past or present employees of the Naval Underwater Systems Center. They make sea weapons for Navy intelligence. One's a computer analyst. The other is a Navy commander who works for U.S. Naval College. So with a Navy commander and a current computer expert and 2 employees of the Navy intelligence, you can believe that this jury will throw out the case. Claus von Bülow is home free. It is a man with ties to Nazi Germany, with organizations throughout the entire world, the Bahamas and every major country, who worked with John Paul Getty, who works with well-known prominent people in New York City, a patron of the arts, enormous fortune that he'll come into. But the selection of 4 people on the jury, such as this lineup, with no problem for the prosecution in accepting this kind of a jury, means that they're ready to blow the case. This happened with Dan White when they had a juror from Bechtel, a juror from the post office, one from the Army Presidio. When you get it with government, federal employees, or people with security clearances, they're not going to blame Dan White for shooting a gay supervisor or Mayor George Moscone. So forget the Claus von Bülow trial. You can watch it unfold, but it's already in the can. He's home free. In the excitement of all the floods and the air crashes, there was an interesting article I picked up in the San Francisco Chronicle, only in one of my many papers. First, the lead story, I looked on page 46, psychologists tell how rats react to economic troubles. And I thought that was pretty funny. But right in the center, that was Raymond Brochures, and it was an obituary right in the center of this psychology story on the rats. Reverend Raymond Brochure funeral services will be held Monday. He died January the 14th, same time as that crash in Washington. Brochures is the controversial gay activist who died in San Francisco in his apartment at the age of 46. The San Francisco coroner's office released a preliminary autopsy that he died of a stroke. That's a preliminary, but he's been cremated. This article said his ashes will be interred in the San Francisco National Cemetery. If you want to go visit the ashes, That is the end of Reverend Raymond brochures. Going back to the news of 1977, May 20th, 1977, Raymond brochures testified before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. Reading that news story, two investigators with the House Assassinations Committee extensively questioned a San Francisco minister this week who says he can link Lee Harvey Oswald to right-wing organizations in the New Orleans area. The Reverend Raymond brochure said that he gave the House investigators a taped two-hour question-and-answer session on his knowledge of the 1963 assassination of President Kennedy. Brochure said he was asked in detail about David Ferry, and because he was close to David Ferry, brochures was, and Ferry's relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans before the Kennedy murder. Ferry was a former CIA contract agent who also worked with Carlos Marcello of organized crime, who died mysteriously in 1967, 5 days after he was publicly linked to the Kennedy conspiracy by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison. Brochure said he talked by telephone to David Ferry 8 days before Ferry's death, and he was convinced that Ferry was murdered because of what he knew on the death plot. But the important thing was that David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald had ties to the Central Intelligence Agency and to trained right-wing groups and members of organized crime. And of course, Carlos Marcello and Ferry worked together, and Ferry and Oswald in New Orleans were known to be together, according to Reverend brochures. Several days after he gave information to the House Select Committee, that was May the 20th, this news story came over. By May 26th, he had his life threatened. Reverend brochures claimed that he was getting telephone threats against his life. He received calls that he was giving information to the House Select Committee. They were threatening him, and the calls, he said, sounded deadly serious. Brochures said that the voice on the other end of the line said, "We know all about you." The voice went on to recount personal details about his past. Brochures later went to the Bay Area in San Francisco and was a gay activist, and David Ferry also was not a gay activist. He was a far right wing, but a gay person in the New Orleans area. He got telephone calls that said, "You're going to regret talking to the investigators," and then they would hang up. And he said again, he had information that Lee Harvey Oswald was in the company of the right-wing anti-Castro people, and he had information. And then he went on to say that the threats at night were telling him that his name is on a mafia hit list. Now, brochures felt that people from going back several years ago were going to murder him. They were threatening to murder him. That was back in 77, but 1982, he got it, and that's the end of Reverend Raymond brochures. The important thing is that the CIA people that he knew were working with David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald were the same team of Theodore Shackley, Edwin Wilson, George Corcola, the Frank Turpel outfit. Edwin Wilson was paymaster for the Bay of Pigs. So was George Corcola, working with Mitchell Werbel and those silencers. Brochures was killed. I'm positive he was murdered, like David Ferry, just at this time when Frank Turpel is dangling on national television and around the world those silencers and guns and hinting at assassinations, which go back to the Kennedy assassination, and then it's time to cling out brochure. Now, along with his murder came another one this week. That's Joey. His nickname is Joey. He's a high killer for the mafia, Max Kirshner. Now, he could have been one. He was in San Francisco Bay Area and Bay Meadows this last week when he was gunned down by a single bullet. And Kirshner had bragged about killing 53 people for organized crime. He wrote a book, Joey Kills. I have the book. And I'll do more details on Kirshner later, because his brother was a high-up former New York City cop called Max Kirshner, while the brother was doing the hits for the mafia and for the CIA. And he wrote a book published by Playboy, and just this week he was gunned down in California just a few days after Raymond Brochure died. The important thing about Kirshner is that he was not only a collector for the Vito Genovese family, but he was a member of the Vito Genovese family. Kirshner, the hired mob killer whose brother was one of the officials of the New York Police Department, was related to Vito Genovese. Genovese had a niece, and these two boys, the hitman Max and Morris Kay, the New York City cop, were sons of Vito Genovese's niece. And so you know how close that these mafia families could interrelate or work together. And again, the important part of Genovese, going back to the Kennedy assassination and Reverend Brochures or Lee Harvey Oswald and David Ferry, was that Jack Ruby got involved in a payment with Vito Genovese and was working with them. They were involved in the Kennedy assassination with Carlos Marcello, so that there is a link that I won't detail now, but a member of the Genovese family was gunned down. He did 53, or bragged about that many people he had killed, and he was out floating around with no problems working for the mafia and CIA. I have his book, and there's an interesting chapter in the book that I'm going to do more details on later. I keep saying later, but there's so much news out, and I don't want you to miss the stories of the murder of Kirshner in your local papers. The book Killer, the Autobiography of a Hitman for the Mafia, had chapter 10 is Some of Our Best Friends Are in Show Business. Now, there's a scandal going on in Hollywood that I will spend a lot of time on soon. The William Holden, Natalie Wood, William French Smith, Elizabeth Taylor, combine linked with Errol Flynn and Ronald Reagan. And in this chapter of his book that he wrote a while back, it goes into Frank Sinatra and organized crime. Well, when Frank Sinatra is right behind the President of the United States most of the time, right by his side and whenever he needs him, it also is important that people like Max Kirshner be removed if they're linked to the Genovese family, because Sinatra was close with Carlos Gambino and John Rosselli at the time Gambino and Rosselli were involved in the Kennedy assassination. And this, I have an idea, this Kirshner was one of the major enforcers, and with Ronald Reagan as President of the United States, it's a very interesting time to wipe out this Kirshner. It's also an important time to get rid of Raymond Brochures, who could link Lee Harvey Oswald, David Ferry, to the international fascist organizations that are being just peeked at with scenes like Frank Turpel has, but could open blow wide open if he wanted some immunity or break these scandals. There's another picture in the paper this week. I don't know why it was there. It's an Associated Press picture called Wanted Men, and there's two men smiling in this, and again, I'll do more details later. One is Britain's Ronald Briggs in Brazil, and the other is France's Albert Spaghieri, who is wearing a wig and a mustache, and they're both safe in Brazil. One took $10 million from a famous robber, and the other took $3 million out of Nice. The important thing about Spaghieri, and I don't know why his picture is here at the time, as I say, is he's written up in detail in that book, The Great Heroin Coup, and his links to Madrid, to the International Fascist Organization, to the P2 scandal in Italy, the Masonic scandal, and to the Marseille narcotics Nazi connection is very heavily related to the formation of Solidarity in Poland with Lech Walesa, that I have a lot of outlines that I will be sharing with you. And it's interesting that there was no article about Spaghieri at this time. I'll share more information on him and the links to Walesa and to AFL-CIO and to the murder of Allende, the fascist organizations with their headquarters in Madrid. He took the money from the Nice, the famous robbery, came to the United States. George Bush was director of the CIA at the time, then went to France and put the money in Madrid. So at a time where all of these people are running around the globe, semi-exposed, there was a picture of them with no story, just wanted men, and they may be the next ones to be wiped out. Don't forget that whoever killed Max Kirshner is out there doing the job for that team and taking over where Kirshner left off and Brochures is dead. The anniversary of the hostages last week, I did a little bit in the week before on McKell Jr., John D. McKell Jr., and his arrest in Texas belonging to the Gestapo Police Department. The Chicago Sun-Times had an update, where are the hostages now? And they describe Mr. McKell as a Marine guard assigned to training management element at Aircraft Wing Training School, El Toro, California. And the New York Times has a long story. What are they doing now? John D. McKill, Jr., a Marine guard in Iran, is now doing Marine training. So with all their good investigators and reporters, there's no mention of his links in Texas to this particular police department and the violence that he's been charged with. I have done a program, Not Enough. I want to get back to Otto von Bolschwang, that notorious Nazi that worked for Heinrich Himmler, the OSS, simultaneously, and for Adolf Hitler and Alan Dulles at the same time, and then came to this country. But I did mention November 22nd, that was a while back on broadcast 520, about Otto von Bolschwang and also his links to the woman in the White House who now makes all appointments for Ronald Reagan. Her name is Helene von Dahm. She was secretary to Ronald Reagan when he was in California. Now she's secretary to him in Washington, D.C. She was a German translator for Otto von Bolschwang, who was brought to California when Reagan became the governor. She worked for the corporation von Bolschwang was the head of and later was linked to Frank Turpel. This particular woman, whose name was in the paper this week, with the expose on von Bolschwang being concealed. He's simply been told he can stay in this country and not deported. Jack Anderson wrote about Helene von Dahm, White House pipeline. He said, this is Friday, January the 15th, a new White House personnel committee will be headed by Helene von Dahm, which is giving her more power than ever. She will survey, scrutinize, and double-check all the administration's political appointees to see if they meet the proper conservative standards. I guess that's if they're wearing swastikas on their undershirts. The loyalty review is in response to complaints by the hardline Reagan supporters that too many moderates are getting jobs in the administration. So Reagan's just too liberal for this Gestapo secretary. She has to decide, and I call her Gestapo secretary because of her links to Otto von Bolschwang and the Galen operation and her career that began in Sacramento, sitting on the side and screening people for Reagan at the time and then moving to Washington and having the identical position. Anyone so close to a Nazi war criminal who should be deported shouldn't be in the position of White House of making appointments now. But according to Jack Anderson, she has been promoted. This January 18th, this past week, was an anniversary. In 1943, Moscow ended the 16-month siege of Leningrad, and that literally was the decision that Germany could not win World War II. It was shortly after that time, and I've mentioned it many times, that the Nazis went underground by April and May of 1943 after the defeat, January the 18th, 1943, and retrenched for people like Helene von Dahm and the Gestapo getting into place. This is the anniversary this January of their holding the line in Leningrad, but now they have to watch the resurgence of the Nazi movement around the world getting ready to make war again. I had an article a while back I forgot to share with you that somebody mailed to me. I asked, where is Maxine Cheshire? She left the Washington Post. She's the most magnificent reporter there is. She had such wonderful things, and she does have a paperback book that you can get a lot of information from. It was published by Dell in 1978. In August of this last year, 1981, in the New York Post, they had an article, Maxine Exit, Another One Bites the Dust. I don't know who the other people were that preceded her in the news media. Maxine Cheshire, the ace syndicated columnist from the Washington Post, is getting married. She's leaving, but explained editor-in-chief Benjamin Bradley, who was with the CIA, Maxine would be married in Houston, Texas. She's getting married to Jack Warren, I assume. She's married there now, co-owner of the Astros, and will not be on the staff of the Washington Post anymore. The article goes on to say that she was miffed because Bradley hired a competitor from the Washington Star when that folded up, and they wanted her to share her column with a column called The Ear. And no way would she share the column. It's a shame she left. One day a week would be better than what we're getting now from the Washington Post. She just had the most wonderful stories and was breaking a lot on the Nugent Hand Bank, on the links of Vesco to the narcotics traffic, to the Carter administration. And she also was revealing a lot of interconnecting links of Washington, D.C. characters that we couldn't get from any other person. In her book, she has one interesting section about Admiral Rembrandt Robinson, who was supposed to become Chief of Naval Operations. He is Kissinger's liaison with Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Moore, and he hoped Robinson wanted to be promoted to Chief of Naval Operations. But there was a party in Washington, D.C., given by Princess Grace of Monaco's nephew or younger cousin. His name is John Layman, who graduated at Cambridge in England. It was a black tie sans pantalons. The men came without their pants, and the women were dressed. And Maxine Cheshire described this and the trouble she had with Ben Bradley trying to force her at that time to retract what she was saying and try to get signatures that the article wasn't true. She had printed this story of this particular party. Later, instead of becoming Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Robinson was shot down and killed in Vietnam over the Tonkin Gulf, and that ended that scandal. Her book is filled with the inner workings of Washington, D.C., things that you don't see very many places. There was a television movie I want to briefly just tell you, probably saw, just tell you a few anecdotes about it. It was last week. It was called Marion Rose White, and it was based on her experiences in a California hospital where she was sterilized by a Dr. Ashcroft. And the description of the movie tells how, in this particular movie, she was not mentally retarded. Her mother put her in a home for mentally retarded. She couldn't learn or study because she needed glasses, and they put her there and had her sterilized. But at the time that Dr. Ashcroft was sterilizing her in California hospital in the 30s, he was corresponding in Great Britain with doctors in Great Britain and also in Germany with Himmler, who was interested in how California was doing sterilizations. And the TV review in the San Francisco Chronicle said, isn't it frightening that we were ahead of Hitler, that the sterilization was here, and King George consulted this Dr. Ashcroft? Well, if you study the medical situation in California and in the United States, there's a lot more to it than we have ever been told, and it's worth investigating. And once again, Errol Flynn's story, Charles Higham wrote in Errol Flynn, The Untold Story, he tells about Dr. Hermann Friedrich Urban, who joined the Nazi Party in 1922, became a United States citizen in 1930 in San Francisco, worked for the Rockefeller Institute, then was with the Gestapo, going around the world with the Nazis recruiting, and a close friend recruited Errol Flynn into the organization. The other item that I've had on programs before about Dr. Joseph Mengele from Auschwitz, who's now working and still working in South America and Paraguay on the Indians there and sterilizing them, and worked for NASA on radiation experiments. He was naturalized in New York, December the 5th, 1932. And incidentally, that FBI report described him as having, in the United States, coming in with dyed hair, plastic surgery, and he masqueraded himself as a construction worker. And I want to get back to construction workers also, as well as doctors, in the second half of this program. Well, this story of Marion Rose White in the 1930s makes sense if you think that Dr. Ashcroft was in correspondence with Himmler, or Dr. Mengele was in New York as an American citizen, or Dr. Urban was naturalized in San Francisco. The experiments on how to eliminate people or genocide evidently has been going on for many, many years. And it's just by bits and pieces of programs such as this that you can make comparisons or begin to add up something that we never were told or people don't want to believe, but seems to be a little more common, and goodness knows how far it goes. 60 Minutes this evening had a section on an Army doctor who does heart surgeries, who then went on to Milwaukee, whose heart surgeries, about 43%, were fatal. The Army covered it up. They forged signatures of approval for him. He was out of the Army with the highest honors. His name is Dr. Stanford, not qualified to do heart surgery. The women were dying or permanently maimed. Children died. They particularly mentioned women and children. He wasn't qualified to do the surgery. Why did the Army give him the approval? Why did the highest people in the hospitals approve of what he was doing, forge other doctors' names when they wouldn't sign it, gave him accolades and honors when he left the Army, let him go to another city to do surgery when they knew he wasn't qualified? What is going on at an Army hospital? Are these experiments, and that he was protected by experiments? Is he like Dr. Ashcroft or Dr. Urban or Dr. Joseph Mengele's? How much is going on to maim people in this country for drug companies or for neutralizing people or people that are maybe political that are on army bases? 60 Minutes just brought that up, and I think of these other doctors, and it's worth asking the question. We'll take a one-minute break now and get back to Air Florida, Flight 90. One more minute.
This concludes the first half.